Hi, Alex.
Hey, Adam. Liver meeting time.
Liver meeting time. Hello, everyone.
Yes.
Welcome to our liver meeting coverage.
Yep. Here, and while none of you are here, I am in Boston, holding down the fort at the actual convention center.
This is episode one of our three-part liver meeting, slate of episodes.
Yeah, some mini pods.
You should be listening to this. The episode would be released on Thursday in anticipation of listening to it before the meeting. But all the oral presentations and obviously all the abstracts are saved online. So if you don't get to check them out when they're live, you'll be able to see them later. Today, we have an interview with Dr. Russell Rosenblatt from Cornell, talking about his experience at the liver meeting and also some of the research that he is presenting this weekend.
Yeah, and then please stay tuned for the episodes later this weekend, as Adam mentioned, that are both from junior faculty as well as trainees. And our goal is not to make it so that you don't need to go look at their and check out their stuff, but more to understand sort of the process of creating it and some of the next steps that they think may be most pertinent to their studies. And we picked them both because we thought they were interesting and also because we thought their research was interesting. These are short episodes, as you can see. They should be sort of 15, 20 minutes thereabouts. So you can pour yourself a cup of coffee in the morning. Get your best cereal or omelet ready, and then listen to this like it's the
very
daily.
Specific.
Just before you log on to the liver meeting site.
Yeah. All right. Well, I hope you enjoy. Thanks, everyone.
We are thrilled to have Dr. Russell Rosenblatt to kick off our liver meeting coverage. Dr. Rosenblatt is an assistant professor of medicine in the Division of Gastroenterology and Hepatology at Weill Cornell in New York City. Welcome to the pod, and thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me, guys.
We thought we might just start with a few questions about the meeting as a whole. Do you know what number liver meeting this is for you?
So I believe this is my... I actually did research for this, and I should remember. I think fourth or fifth meeting in a row. I think I went my second year of GI fellowship, so probably four or five. Yeah, definitely an interesting one, though. We'll see how this works out. I'm excited for it.
Yeah. So to that point, obviously, this is a slightly different meeting than in prior years. But we were just curious if you had any advice for those that are coming for the first time, with the caveat being that it's a little different this year.
I'm very interested to see how this is going to work out. The one thing that I always do before is I actually read all the abstracts and posters and orals and just, you know, get an idea of what I want to be at and what I don't want to miss. I make sure I hit all my friends' talks and I will be there for that. I always look at, what are people doing and what is like kind of a novel idea that I could maybe implement my own research, and then who is someone who would be a good collaborator in the future, or who's someone who I could see myself working with. I do like the postgrad course and SIG programming, and I'm actually involved in the public health SIG, so their program on population screening for liver disease worldwide is something I'll definitely be tuning into. And thankfully, New York weather isn't that nice in November, so I won't be outside, and I can sit home and listen in a relaxed environment. So it'll be interesting.
Just to follow up on that, any advice, for someone, or anything in particular that you have circled aside from those things that are kind of like an annual, like must attend?
Yeah, I probably should have answered your question the first time.
No, that's fine.
I think, the best part of ASLD is meeting up with friends that you just run into along the way, internal medicine, co-residents, co-GI fellows, or people you interviewed with. These are people who you'll work with your whole life. So I always make it a point to make sure that you kind of link up with people. That may be a little different this year, and maybe you'll have to do it over Zoom. And instead of the happy hours that lead to late night hours, maybe it'll be a happy hour over Zoom. And, more of a one-on-one sort of thing as opposed to groups, but I feel like we can make it work. We're all social people.
To segue into some of your research, you've done some work on multi-drug resistant organisms in transplant recipients, and I believe you have a poster of distinction at this year's meeting. Can you tell us a little bit about the work that you've done and what your group found?
Yeah, so this is a project that was really about 2 years in the making or so. I started this when I was a fellow, a transplant fellow. And I worked with Betsy Verna, who is one of my mentors when I was a fellow at Columbia, and still one of my mentors. And, you know, she was very involved in the AST Liver and Intestinal Community of Practice, or LICOP, and the education subcommittee. And she was part of multiple different studies that were done with like multi-center retrospective studies that had really interesting premises, ideas, sub-studies, and was really productive. And she always knew I had this interest in MDR infections. And she's like, why don't you propose a study in the group and see who will come in and be interested. So we proposed a study and six centers came in and we analyzed actually like around 2/3 of the cohort, or over 600 patients. We found that these are all, it's a retrospective analysis of 2 years of transplant recipients from different centers across the country. We found that almost a quarter of the patients had MDR infections. 13% had multiple MDR infections. And what, you know, Betsy and I suspected from our experience at Columbia was that VRE would become the most common MDR infection. And that really was found to be true. You know, we identified risk factors of MDR infection. We found that having a previous infection, not surprisingly, high risk, you know, broad spectrum antibiotics, a previous transplant, a simultaneous liver kidney and biliary complications were all associated. And we also found that MDR infections doubled mortality as well.
And when you're putting together a multi-center consortium like that, how are you identifying collaborators? You know, it sounds like you emailed maybe quite a few people, but ended up getting, you know, a handful to collaborate with you on that. What's the process like for people, you know, for people who maybe haven't done multi-center research or consortium-based research like you've done for this project?
I really have to say that AST LICOP, the Education Subcommittee, is just an incredibly inviting space and group of people where people pitch ideas and, you know, everyone can kind of weigh in. And you have people who are young, who are enthusiastic, who are incredibly well-published, like Lisa Van Wagner, Jen Lai, Betsy, you know, people who I looked up to and we all look up to who are just, you know, giving input, who are giving recommendations right then and there, help cultivating your idea. And then a bunch of other young people like you who are interested in getting their name out there and, you know, pursuing research and who have residents in their own areas that also may be interested in their own hospitals. So it's actually just a very naturally collaborative environment where everyone works quite nicely. So join AST LICOP is my pitch.
Right. There you go. So AST LICOP. And then ASLD also has their SIGs, which are similar, which are ways of getting plugged in as well. But specifically, your work through the AST, which seems like a great way to network and also find collaborators for any ideas that you might have, or join other people's studies and be collaborators on their research as well.
And the SIGs are awesome. I mean, the ASLD alcohol SIG just published a great survey study in CGH that was fantastic and showed how really lacking education, how our fellows and attendings lack education in pharmacologic treatment of alcohol liver disease. You know, you just have to find generally people who join these groups, who are involved, who go to every meeting. They're the people who are going to be interested in doing research on it.
I'm fairly certain that was an organic plug, but Adam was one of the creators and authors on said paper, and so we're going to have to cut this entire thing out because we can't have that kind of praise for him in the middle of the podcast.
I do think that it's proof positive, though, that, you know, just by leaving a message on the SIG, I ended up getting involved in like a pretty, you know, highly impactful study that was published in, you know, with a lot of really thoughtful and collaborators. And so I think it speaks to the power of the SIGs, you know, the groups at AST as well, that you really can get, you know, geared into some really interesting stuff. So I think we can keep it in.
All right.
I don't give out praise to anyone, so you could just cut it. No.
Okay. Okay, fine.
I'm kidding. But I would say that, like, you know, in terms of getting people involved, you know, obviously it's hard to sell someone to be seventh author in something.
Sure.
You know, no one's going to look at 200 charts and be like, oh, seventh author sounds perfect for one paper. So like when I was doing this, I was like, you know what? Before I even pitched the idea, I had five or six ideas that were sub-studies. And I'm like, these are potential publications or posters at a meeting. Mm-hmm. Like, you guys, in the order you join, pick one. And you'll be the first and last author on this one. And I'll be second author or whatever. And let's just all work together. And everyone, if we get four or five publications out of this and everyone's hard work is worth it then. And that's how I think you have to incentivize everyone to do the work, because it's a lot of time. I mean, you don't have a lot of time, you know, that's free. Not everyone has ability to get people to do all their work for them. It's not easy. So, you know.
So I have to ask you, so your consortium was called Alt Rock. Do you have a famous or favorite Alt Rock band?
You know, I will tell you that I don't particularly have a favorite Alt Rock band, though. I think I spent as much time doing research and looking at charts as I did coming up with the name of our consortium. And I have no regrets about it. And actually, because we have two other posters, one from the Colorado group looking at living donor liver transplant, and one from my Duke colleagues, Yuval and Nikhil, and then, I'm sorry, Mike and Nancy at Colorado. And we wanted to come up with a poster template that was around the same. And I came up with a poster template where we had like a Eddie Van Halen picture on the background that I figured we would all use, RIP, to a real one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Fair enough. As we alluded to, but impressively, there's a second poster of yours at the conference as well. And that one is actually looking at racial disparities in liver transplantation, with the major finding being that Black patients are less likely to be listed for liver transplant. Could you talk a little bit about this study and its findings?
Yeah, this is a study. This is a topic that, for lack of a better phrase, really grinds my gears, because I think, you know, I guess kind of giving some backstory, you know, Cynthia Moyland from Duke published this awesome paper in JAMA in 2008, showing that since the implementation of MELD, that racial and ethnic disparities on the wait list disappeared, which is fantastic and an accomplishment and a testament to the objective nature of MELD. Obviously, there are gender disparities, but, you know, it did some good for sure. But, you know, how many patients are not getting to the wait list? And this is something that I think is really just incredibly hard to measure. Liver disease is silent. It's, you know, inherently silent. We don't know how to measure the denominator. And basically my thought was, well, what if we measure the number of deaths within a transplant age range, and then measure the number of patients listed and basically kind of create a ratio. So we created this listed to death ratio, combining two databases, the CDC Wonder for deaths and then the UNOS database for listing. And what you see is that Black patients have really much lower listing rates compared to their deaths due to liver disease. Whites and Hispanics are pretty close, and Asians actually have the best. Interestingly, Blacks have the highest transplantation rate on the wait list. But still, when you look at their number of transplants to deaths, they still have the lowest percentage of that lowest ratio, the transplant to death rate. So just by nature, really, of them being listed at a lower rate, they are disadvantaged. And it goes to show you that even if we, you know, fix everything on the wait list, we're only just addressing a small part of the problem. And this goes to show you that we really need to get patients before, obviously before they die, but before, we need to look at before our wait list. And people have looked at this before and shown disparities. Julius Wilder published a study in liver transplant in 2016 looking at this. But I think we just need much more nationwide research. And I hope that this kind of is a first step in that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think there's no question that identifying the disparities is sort of the necessary first step in starting to try to address systemic racism in medicine. And clearly there are things that are underlying the fact that less Black patients are being listed. I'm curious if you've sort of come across any strategies that may work or any things that you're thinking about in your own practice in terms of trying to help with this disparity of less Black patients being, I guess, worked up and listed for transplant.
You know, I will tell you that my thoughts generally are a lot of these things have to be done locally. And I don't think kind of national strategies in general will be enough. But what we should do locally is take what other people have done successfully and then implement that with a twist in our own area. Mm-hmm. And as an example, Danae Simpson, who from Northwestern, gave this amazing transplant grand rounds last month or so. And she does transplant surgery and kidney transplant, went to basically these inner city neighborhoods in Chicago, really found patients who were disadvantaged, connected with the community, gained trust, and just really saved lives as a result, just single-handedly, putting the time in, the effort, understanding, like making alliances with the community, showing that she's there to help and she's an ally. And, you know, actually, this is something that we are also, we started as well at Columbia. Some of our nurse practitioners and Lorna Dove, who's our head of liver transplant at Columbia, took the lead and created a Black Liver Health Initiative, which we're working with. Mm. And we're trying to extend this into neighborhoods, you know, in Brooklyn, other areas that are just basically, you know, disadvantaged and kind of forgotten about, who are far away from hospitals, far away from public transportation. You just need to go to those neighborhoods. Of course, you know, us offering care is very helpful, but if we don't insure patients, we don't give them the financial means to afford, you know, $250,000 surgery and all the other things, it's just, you know, a drop in the ocean, you know? So hopefully we insure everyone, in my opinion. Medications are affordable, ideally free. And we reach patients who are just not reached. So some of those things are national things that require, you know, millions of voters, other stuff. But certainly, I would say that, you know, we can all do things in our community better, and we should take what other people have done well and just implement that in our own communities.
Yeah, thank you. And as a plug for future episodes, we're in the works on sort of an entire episode looking at racial disparities in liver medicine. So please stay tuned for that. While we're on the topic of plugs, can you sort of tell our listeners when both of your posters will be and anything else that you may have to plug for the meeting?
So I believe my posters are Friday. You guys can correct me if I'm wrong. Yes, good. Thank you. Yes. I saw two head nods, so that is correct. Thank you.
The 13th, November 13th.
November 13th. Yeah, Friday. I do have, so I do want to plug a few things. So one is that you guys may have heard me mention LICOP Education Subcommittee before. I'm not sure. But Pratima Sharma and our kidney group have three posters from that. One of my residents, Nabil Wahid, who actually on the phone together during a research meeting, we came up with the idea of listing to death ratio together. And he's a medicine resident. He's giving an oral presentation on the impact of the Medicare expansion on listing and death rates due to liver disease, which is an amazing and awesome topic. And his presentation is fantastic. And he is definitely a rising star in diversities in liver disease for sure. I'm definitely leaving people out, but that's all I got off the top of my head.
Well, I'll take it. Well, we want to thank you so much for coming on the podcast. But before we let you go, we have to do, at least since this is a mini episode, we're going to do a mini lightning round question and just ask you one of our, you know, I think infamous lightning round questions, which is...
Buckle up.
Buckle up, yeah. What is your favorite liver cell?
I'm a cholangiocyte type of cat myself.
Okay.
All right. A cholangiocyte. I don't think we've had that.
Yeah, I think that's technically our second vote for the cholangiocyte with Kathleen Viveros from episode one.
Right.
So
that's right. That's right.
There are only so many of them.
Yeah.
Ito cells always have a good name, and you know, I always think of Judge Ito.
Oh, there you go.
You know, I'll let someone else get that as their answer.
All right. Well, thank you so much for being our first guest from the Liver Meeting and sharing a little bit about your work.
Keep up the good work with the Liver Fellow Network.
So thank you again to Russell Rosenblatt for coming on. Please stay tuned. This Saturday night, our next mini episode will drop. I hope you all enjoy your Friday at the Liver Meeting and then the postgrad course on Saturday.
Bye, Alex.
Bye, Adam.